It's also very difficult to actually implement. These are functional. These are the manner how Chesed and Gvura Tiferes are realized, either through Netzach or through Hoyda, through a combination of both. Then we continue to Yesod. Yesod literally means foundation, but in the larger sense, it means bonding, communicating. What is the ability of Yesod? It's very, very powerful, Yesod. It's also a functional faculty. It's the art, the ability to bond with yourself, with your fellow man, with an individual. It's implementing a bond, a connection. And it's a very unique ability. Let me explain you what this ability is. There is sometimes you're trying to explain something to someone. 1 hour, 2 hours, nothing is going. The person just does not understand where you're coming from. By the end, as you're leaving, you already gave up. By mistake, you uttered 4 words and the person says, "I got it." It happens often. 4 unexpected words. This clarified the whole concept. What is it? What's the reason for this dichotomy? I remember once hearing from a professor in Jerusalem. It's a very good lesson about a speech he gave. But after 20 minutes, the entire crowd was asleep. And he was very upset. He prepared well. It was a brilliant essay he presented. But the crowd simply found it very boring and they weren't interested. So later, he was discussing it and he explained something very interesting, very fundamental. When a speaker speaks, he understands and he feels what he says. I'm talking about a healthy speaker who has something what to say. So when he speaks, the words are a continuation. They are a connection and an expansion of his ideas and feelings. So he speaks and he thinks it's so good, it's so amazing, it's so powerful, because he knows that he understands it so well and he feels for it so well. And he expects the crowd to reciprocate. But the crowd does not understand or feel what he feels. They're not him. They know only the words. By them, the words are a disconnected reality from the person. So the person has to manage to take the words, and the words have to convey the essence of the idea. But a lot of times, the person feels it. He's making it with his hands, and everyone is supposed to understand. But they're not him. They're other people. Yesod is the ability to bond. It's the ability to communicate to another person's reality, to enter into another person's world, scope of being, vantage point, and get them from there. That's the ability of Yesod. Get them in a positive sense. The truth is, the 10 faculties exist both in the divine soul and in the animal soul. We'll see in Perek Vav. So they can both, there's a polarity, they can be used either way. Finally, we come to Malchus. Malchus is regality, royalty, nobility, aristocracy, and kingship. It's different from all the other previous 6 in the sense that it's a state of being rather than an activity. All the other 6 midos are activities of the human being. This is a state of nobility. There is a certain sense of aloofness, of exaltation, a little bit of charisma and nobility, kingship, that characterizes certain human beings. Sometimes a human being comes into a room, presents a case, speaks, and you sense a certain aura of sublimity, of aloofness. It's a powerful sense of human dignity and aristocracy. It's not losing yourselves and getting tangled up in the nuances of our physical, mundane, multifaceted, multidimensional reality. It's a king. It's royalty. And every human being possesses this ability of Malchus, the ability of kingship. Malchus is a very powerful sense of belonging, of knowing that you matter and you make a difference, that you have a place in this world, you have a mission in the world. Malchus is the sense of kingship in a human being's life. Now, I want to add one more point. If you look at your sheets, you'll see that the formula of the spheres of the 10 faculties are in 3 columns. Now, this picture has to be understood from the, not from the side of the reader, but from the side of the one experiencing it. Not mimin ha-kairi, but mimin ha-meniach. So chachma, chesed, and netzach are right column. Bina, gvura, and hoid, left column. Das, tif, eres, yisoid, center column. The same is true in the counterpart of the human body, as discussed before. The brain, the right part of the brain, the right arm, the right leg, the left part of the brain, the left arm and the left leg. And then the center of the brain connected to the spinal cord, the torso, and finally, yesod communicativity is represented in the procreative organ of the human body. What is the connection? Because that is the organ where the human being can experience the deepest fusion and union in the relationship of a husband and a wife, the deepest and most intimate, powerful relationship as discussed in the conclusion of Perek Beis of Tanya in class number 10 about this concept of bonding in Yisrael in the physical sense of the word. Malchus corresponds to the mouth of the human being, our power of speech. What are the 3 columns? If you realized and followed the structure of the spheres, you'll see that the 3 columns are so divided because they are very much connected to each other. Chachma, Chesed, and Netzach. Do you get the connection? On different levels. Chachma is cognitive, Chesed is emotional, and Netzach is functional. But nevertheless, it's a very powerful common denominator. All of them are very much about inspiration, enthralling. They are very much about the journey from within to without. In Chachma, a human being conceives a new concept. There is a thrill. In Bina, the thrill is gone. Bina is the art of meticulously systemizing, articulating, defining, quantifying. There are human beings who are brilliant in conceiving new ideas. And there are people who are excellent in researching. They love reading dictionaries and encyclopedias. Others are going crazy from it. It's Chachma is very much expansion. And being enthralled and overwhelmed by something new. Bina is very much taking what you have, probing its depth, focusing on it, getting deeper and deeper, digging. Chachma is a journey from within to without. Bina is a journey from without to within. Chachma is a journey where you suspend yourself, you want to receive something outside of yourself. Bina is you have it, get deeper into it. Contemplate it from all its side, and its breadth, and its length, and its depth. That's what Bina is. So what do we have in the emotional? The same aspect. Chesed is the thrill of attraction. Bina is restraint. Gvura, restraint, awe, discipline. It is not going from within to without, but it's a journey from without back in. And the same is true about Netzach and Hoid. Netzach is again that stimulating power of victory. Hoid, what is Hoid? You have something? Submit, devote to the task at hand. And finally, you have the center column, which is Das, Tiferes, and Yisoid. And over here, we have the concept of fusion. In all these 3 elements, the human being becomes connected to the depth of experience. In Das, it's connection to the concept. Chachma and Bina, you're detached from the concept. Das, you become one with the concept. In emotions, Chesed and Gvura, you're still detached from the other individual. Tiferes, there's fusion, there's harmony. And finally, Yisoid is the function. On a functional level, the art of actually bonding and communicating with your fellow. So this is the right column, this is the left column, and this is the center column. In the personalities of our history, the Zohar says, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aaron, and David are the embodiments, personifications of every one of these attributes. So when you learn Chumash, and you know that Avram is chesed, you suddenly understand the essence of Avram's life and experiences. The same is true with Yitzchak Gvura, Yaakov Teferis. This explains the enigma of Yitzchak's life, for example, which when you read it in the Chumash, it's very difficult to understand. But when you get the picture of Gvura, you understand what the Gvura is, you see this is what Yitzchak embodied. But over here it's important to emphasize, and with this we will conclude, that every single one of the attributes, in order to be healthy, constructive, and productive, must consist of the other elements as well. So for example, chesed, there is chesed shebechesed, and there's gvura shebechesed, and then there's teferes shebechesed, and there's netzach shebechesed. And the same is true with gvura, and teferes, and netzach hadyisayid malchus. Thus, 7 times 7, every one of the 7 consists of all the other 7, 49 days. And that's the whole idea of counting of the Omer. Counting of the Omer is every single day between Pesach and Shavuos, we focus on one of the faculties and attributes of our personality and refine it. Today, like by Omer, the 35th day of the Omer, Hayit Shabahayit. Today we focus on our ability to submit ourselves to something, to devote ourselves to an ideal, to a vision, to a task at hand. Yesterday we focused about our netzach ability in Hayit. There's no netzach in Hayit, it's also not good. That's why they're called midos, by the way. What does a midah mean? Why are the faculties called midos? Midos means measurements, indicating fixed measurements and dimensions. Because in order that the midos should be productive and successful, they have to be fixed and very focused, consisting and borrowing and lending to the other elements as well. Comes the Alter Rebbe in Perek Gimel of Tanya and says that the divine soul of the Jew consists of 10 faculties. And consisting of 10 faculties, he says, why? They correspond to the 10 divine faculties. Our sages speak of 10 divine spheres, 10 divine attributes that Hashem projected from Himself to serve as the 10 basic spiritual building blocks of creation, which these 10 building blocks form every object, force, phenomenon, creature in existence. The human being mirrors and reflects, projects the divine reality that we also possess 10 basic faculties, intellectual and character traits, which are the essence of the countless millions of ideas, feelings, motives, and deeds that we experience in our life. Thus, we have to work and attempt that our 10 faculties should mirror, reflect the 10 divine attributes. Our chachma should be a divine, our being a divine, das, chesed, gvura, and vice versa. Eiv says, Mipsari echzel eka, from my flesh I shall sense, I shall see, I shall observe the divine. That from understanding and delving into the structure of our 10 faculties, we can have some type of faint glimmer of understanding and appreciate the manner, the 10 characteristics, so to speak, which Hashem projected from Himself to form, sustain, and relate to His creation. And therefore, the human being also possesses these 10 faculties. However, we have 2 souls. We have an animal soul and a divine soul. The animal soul consists of these 10 faculties, but they are very self-oriented and directed. So Tiferes in the animal soul can be very much about manipulating another person and destroy him from inside, and so on and so forth. Sometimes it's a more subtle. But in Perek Gimel we discuss the 10 faculties of the divine soul. The 10 faculties of the divine soul are what? Conception, comprehension, and application of the godly reality. Love and awe that are intrinsically connected to the godly reality. It's the experience of Tiferes, of harmony with the godly reality. It's the power of the divine soul to overcome obstacles, the power to fight for something, our readiness to give our lives for something, that's Netzach, our submission to the divine reality, our bonding, and the sense of nobility that it ingrains within our identities. And therefore, now we also understand how the Alter Rebbe concludes that all the spheres are ultimately Anfei Hayira V'Ha'ava. Because the essence of all the spheres are actually expressed in the first 3, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, which is either the journey from within to without, or the journey from without to within, or the fusion from the inner and the outer.
So that's why the Alter Rebbe enumerates the first three. And all the other spheres are offshoots of Chesed, Gvura, Teferis, or even more generally, offshoots of Yira and Ava, which is basically either the sense of self-assertion, of self-expansion, of inspiration, of yeah, or the power of negation, of withdrawal, of rejection, the power of not. Today, like Ba'emer, Hayt Shebahayt, gives us the ability and the energy to surrender unconditionally to the divine reality.
Yeah.
The question was asked, a very good question, that in many charts, he sees Keser on the top. We'll have the spheres and you'll see Keser on the top. Keser means a crown. Over here, there's no Keser. If you look in those charts carefully, you'll see that it's missing Das. You ever realize that? Okay. Keser is the global origin of the human experience. It's our subconscious desires and personality. Therefore, in Tanya and Perek Gimel, where he focuses on the conscious efforts of the human being to connect to the divine reality, we begin with Chachma. Because Keser, although it's part and parcel of the human personality, usually it's identified with subconscious forces that exist beneath the surface, beyond Chachma. In the sense, those are the inner traits and characteristics that the person sometimes is not even consciously aware or cognitive of. Therefore, our efforts, conscious efforts, usually begin with the realm of Chachma. However, Keser is also in the middle. Why is it in the middle column? Again, because Keser is about the depth of ourself. Keser and Das are interchangeable. What Das is in the cognitive experience, in the conscious experience, Keser is in the subconscious experience. Therefore, it depends in what context you're discussing the 10 spheres. Sometimes you're discussing it in a context where you'll count Keser and eliminate Das. Sometimes Das is without Keser. I mentioned seven leaders that corresponded to the seven Midos. Who's what? Who's who? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Chesed, Gvura, Teferis, Moshe Netzach, Aaron Hoyt, Yosef Yisoid, and David HaMalach is Malchus. The connection between these personalities and the respective attributes is beyond the parameters of today's class. It's a separate discussion. But generally speaking, sometimes we discuss it in a different manner, but generally speaking, these seven personalities correspond to these seven Midas. Yeah. Okay, very good. You didn't understand the difference between Tiferes and Yesod, because I explained both of them as constituting the ability to connect and to bond with another human being. So what is the difference between Tiferes and Yesod? True, they are both connected to the quality of bonding. But Tiferes is the third attribute of the emotional spheres. Yisoid is the third attribute of the functional spheres. So Tiferes is about the ability of experiencing internally an emotional bonding on the level we described above. Yisoid is about the ability of actually bonding with another person. Not experiencing him internally, but actualizing a connection and a bond. So one can experience Tiferes, but still be lacking in Yesod. Conversely, one may master the skill of Yesod, devoid of the art of Tiferes. Let's take the example of the teacher I gave earlier. A teacher who is equipped with the Tiferes faculty will naturally not just have contact with his or her students, but will indeed experience them. The teacher will sense the needs of every single student present in the classroom. And not as a result of contemplation and meticulous calculation concerning the nature of each student,
but rather a man who has cultivated the Tiferes energy is instinctively attuned to the recipient's reality. In Chesed, you're the giver. In Gvura, you're the recipient expecting feedback. In Tiferes, the distinction between the giver and the taker fades away. They fuse together into a seamless whole. This is Tiferes. I remind myself of a story. They tell on the Rebbe Maharash, the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, great grandson of the Alter Rebbe, Reb Shmuel Schneerson. He was sitting one evening and accepting people who came to see him, which was known as Yechides. Yechides means oneness, and it's the encounter of souls between the soul of the Rebbe and the soul of a chassid. 3 hours have passed, and many people came to see the Rebbe during these hours. Many more were waiting online, and the Rebbe was totally exhausted. He called in a secretary, he gave him his clothes, and he asked for a new set of clothes. As the secretary was walking out, he felt the clothes. They were drenched. But they weren't only drenched. It's as if these clothes were submerged in a mikveh, in a pool of water for a few days. They were so soaked. So he's whispering to himself. He's saying, Master of the Universe, Ribbono Shel Olam, for heaven's sake, what was the Rebbe doing for the past 3 hours? He was just sitting at a desk talking to people. Why is he sweating? Why does he exert himself so? Why is he so exhausted? Why is he so tired? Why is the clothes so wet as if it's just experienced the marble, the flood? The Rebbe overheard him, stood up, went to the door, and said, Let me explain to you. In the past 3 hours, 20 people have come to see me. Every person pours out his soul, his heart, his dilemmas, his problems, anxieties, pains, pain and so forth. When the person begins talking and expressing to me his issues, what I must do, I must divest myself from my garments and put on the other person's clothes. Because if I remain in my own garments, I cannot really understand what the other person is saying. In order to identify with the other person's problems, in order to empathize with the other person's problems, I must see reality from his vision, from his lenses, from his perspective. So I can't remain dressed in my own clothes. I must remove my garments, put on the other person's garments. And then, can I see, can I really appreciate, can I tune in to what this person is saying? If not, I'm a stranger, I'm an alien person, I don't really get the problem. When the person finishes talking, and he awaits my response, now I must divest myself from his garments and return back into my set of clothes. Because if I remain in his garments, I can't give him a solution because I'm part of the problem. He came to me to ask my solution, my advice. So now I have to go back into my clothes, assume my perspective, and now I can give him advice. And then when I finish my advice, and he continues presenting another dilemma, another issue, once again I have to divest myself from my clothes, put on his garments, put on his lenses. And then when he finishes and I have to give him an answer, I have to go back into my clothes. And so on and so forth for every question, every answer, every person who have come seeing me. The Rebbe says, now you try, 3 hours, to change your clothes hundreds and hundreds of times, and let's see how not exhausted you'll be and how dry your clothes will be. If this is so concerning physical garments, concerning mental, emotional, psychological, spiritual garments, it's infinitely more. That's Tiferes. Tiferes is not just listening or talking or communicating. Tiferes is experiencing fusion. But then there's Yesod. Yesod is not about experiencing another person. Yesod is powerful communication. The skill of real communication. One might experience the other human being, for example, and be totally in tune to his or her needs, but still be lacking the ability of actually bonding and communicating with him. Tiferes is more emotional-oriented. Yesod is more functional-oriented. Yesod constitutes the ability of communicativity, where you can enter into the other individual's mode of being and communicate to him from there. Yesod is so often about the choice of words you make, the gestures that accompany the words. Yesod has to do sometimes with a wave of the hand. How you say the phrase, a nod of a head, a smile, a frown, a raised eyebrow, a nuance. Sometimes silence, pure silence. So they're both from the middle column, they're both connected to bonding, but nevertheless there's a world of difference between them. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's see, that's... can I articulate in brief, sharp terms the main characteristics which define each one of the three sets of columns in the spheres? You did not grasp what I said earlier. Define in brief, sharp terms. Let's see. Okay. I'll say a few words. The right column is defined by activity, by excitement, by self-expansion. The left column is defined by apparent passivity, silence, internalization, self-withdrawal. The center column is defined by application and fusion. That's how I would put it. All of the spheres of the right column, in all of them, there is a surge of enthusiasm, vitality, that permeates the person. In all of them, a person experiences a swelling of inspiration. Conception of a new idea is exciting. Attraction and love are certainly exciting. And competition is exciting. It's so exciting that it even engages the spectator. Masses of people gather to watch competitive sporting events and so forth. In America, it's one of the biggest industries. How many times does someone tell me, I cannot come learn with you this evening because Monday night football. Frederick Bayem, over here you're learning something about your life. And here you're watching other people competing with each other. But upon him, to no avail, upon him, the excitement of watching other people compete is so powerful. So competition is very exciting. In the three faculties of Chachma, Chesed, and Netzach, the person becomes enthralled by something or someone outside of him. He expands his horizons. He broadens his space through self-expansion, intellectually, emotionally, whatever it may be. The left column, on the other hand, is opposed, it's in contrast to that. The three spheres, Bina, Gvura, and Hod, are not about the expansiveness of self. They're rather about the self going inward. Again, intellectually or emotionally. They're not about stamina, excitement. Rather, they're more about consistency, commitment, discipline, creating boundaries. There's obedience, compliance in these spheres. And the center column, there's application and fusion. Again, whether application and fusion to oneself, like in Das, or to one's fellow man, like in Tiferes and Yesod, as explained earlier. Yes, you're welcome. Okay. We'll take one more. This will be the last question, yeah? You see in the diagram of the spheres that Malchus is not included in any of the three columns. Right, left, or center. Why? That is true. Malchus is disconnected. Because Malchus is a general faculty which encompasses all of the other nine faculties. In essence, Malchus serves as the amplifier of the other nine spheres. The other spheres are filtered through Malchus and they're realized in a new way. So therefore, in a sense, it's disconnected from the other ones. It's a general faculty that stands alone and encompasses all of them. Why? That's what Malchus is. Why is that? Okay, I gave before various translations for Malchus. Let me try another one. This might drive the point home a little better. Malchus means presence. You know there are people that have presence? A man of Malchus means a man who has presence. There are those people who don't have presence, there are people who have presence. There is an inner presence and an outer presence. There is internal nobility, external nobility. Some people profess one without the other. Others profess both. Others profess none. Now imagine someone who has a presence to him, but nothing else. He gives off this certain aura, but there is nothing beneath the aura. You see, presence itself does not have an independent substance. When someone possesses other attributes and faculties, the presence and nobility serve as a powerful conduit through which all of the other attributes are enhanced, are amplified, they're actualized, they're realized in such a more powerful way. But someone who has only Malchus, someone who has only an aura and presence, but no personality, no wisdom, no intelligence, no kindness, no features, no characteristics that define him or her, the Malchus is really valueless. It doesn't have a substance of its own. It serves as a very powerful, as the most powerful amplifier of all other attributes and faculties. In fact, in a sense, it is the essence, the backbone of all the other faculties. When does a person receive Malchus? How does a person cultivate Malchus? It begins at the youngest, at the most earliest time in life, when a mother lovingly cradles her child in her arms, and the child's eyes meet the mother's affectionate gazing eyes, the child receives the following message: I am wanted and needed in this world. I have a comfortable place where I will always be loved. I have nothing to fear. I feel like royalty in my heart. This is Malchus, this is kingship. Unfortunately, you see, especially in today's generation, people who have all the other 9 faculties, perhaps, functioning in a very efficient way. A person can be intelligent and wise and kind and have very powerful attributes of endurance and submission and bonding and charisma and so on and so forth. But as a child, they didn't get this sense of Malchus, this inner confidence and security that I exist and my existence matters and it's significant and it's positive. And everything else is hindered in their life. Everything else is not functioning properly. Malchus allows them to be expressed and realized in a whole new powerful way. And if a person didn't get that cultivated as a child, we always have the ability to tap into the Malchus faculty which the soul possesses eternally and unequivocally and actualize it. Like all other spheres, there is healthy Malchus and unhealthy Malchus. There is productive nobility and there is abusive aristocracy. A humble, honest person is humbled by the fact that he has a power to influence other people. That he has a power of, that he has an aura, that he has regality, royalty, kingship, and he can actually enhance other people's lives. He is humbled by that. And therefore he always utilizes it for constructive purposes. An abusive person sees this quality that he has, the quality of aristocracy, just as a tool, as an instrument, to step on other people, to disregard them, to mislead them, to be abusive towards them, and so on and so forth. The Gemara gives an extraordinary example of this. Rabbah, the Gemara says at the conclusion of Hyrius, that Rabbah was a leader of the Jewish people in Pumpedissa and Bavel, and all the years that Rabbah reigned, that he was the Nasi, even an Umman to his home he didn't summon. He didn't even summon to his home an Umman, as Rashi explains, a doctor, a Raifi to be Mekiz Dam, who would take out blood from the body for health reasons. He wouldn't even call that person to his home. He would go himself to the doctor. Aye, he's the Nasi. You can't send a message to the doctor to come to the leader of the Jewish people's homes. But he didn't want that anyone should think that he's using his authority. He's utilizing his authority to use another person in an unjustified fashion. So he went to the other extreme, that he didn't even call an Umman to his home. He went there himself. No one should accuse that he's using his malchus to get something for himself. He was always in tune with his responsibility as a melech. So that's the uniqueness, that's the idea of malchus. Okay, have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichel Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichel Menachem at 718-633-1076.